strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Interesting how the opinions of people and how they've changed. I firmly believe that the statements of the Tempe Union District last night are showing a shift. We know that the Phoenix Union High School District has done this. What I mean by that is they have taken school resource officers out of school. The idea that people believe when the police are around, you're less safe, is only true for criminals. Even if you believe, and I mean this sincerely, even if you believe that police officers are more prone to punish or go after or suspect people that are non-white more than they are white people, even if you believe that's true, what are they doing in the high schools? Do you think they are harassing Hispanic and black students in school, Asian students, Middle Eastern students? Are they letting white kids get a pass and going after kids of different colors? How does a police officer in a school make a student feel unsafe? What is an armed police officer going to do that they're afraid of? And if they do have a fear, it's an irrational fear. And I don't think that my statement right there was just controversial, but some people will. The idea that the majority of people in our society are afraid of the police. And here's the problem. There is a reasonable conversation to be had about policing that we've been having. There have been changes in the Phoenix Police Department and how they do things, tactics, and whether it's chokeholds or otherwise, detainment tactics and the way they do things. And I will submit to you that police would be less violent if there were more of them. And this is where the shift is. This is where the shift in people's mentality is. If you believe cops are violent by nature, then you think more cops create more violence. If you think that police officers are peace officers, more of them helps them keep the peace. There is strength in numbers. When police officers go en masse to a scene, it's to control a scene. It's to stop the adversary in that situation from acting out because it's not one-on-one. I've used this example before, and I'm going to lean on it one more time. There was a relatively new Phoenix police officer that was patrolling and was called to a scene at 35th Avenue in Union Hills in North Phoenix. She was by herself in a patrol vehicle. It was a call of a man with a knife at threatening people in a parking lot. The guy had a large knife. When she arrived on scene by herself, no backup yet, this guy was in the parking lot screaming and yelling and making threats. When she got out of her vehicle, he turned his attention to her. He began to pursue her, yelling and screaming and cursing and making threats of physical violence. She was backing away. She did everything that's right. Even if you're not a cop and you know anything about police training, she did everything right. She was looking at behind this man in case she had to shoot, that there were no civilians that might get hit by gunfire. She backed and kept him at a distance that was safe, or as safe as could be, with a man with a knife, while she was able to keep her gun trained on him, keep her eyes on him and never lose eyesight, and keep the area safe and keep his attention on her and not the civilians. She continued to walk backwards around her vehicle as this guy pursued her. You could hear in the distance sirens. You could hear backup coming, but they weren't there yet. It was over 60 seconds, which may not sound like a long time until you're in that situation. In the end of the video, which was taken by a cell phone video of somebody in their car watching, she had to shoot this man because he lunged at her. He lived, but she had to shoot him. I would submit to you, if there had been three or four cops on that scene instead of one, if this had been a two-person patrol vehicle, that one of those people could have had less than lethal force and been able to tase this guy or use less than lethal force instead of having to shoot him. And he was 100% in the wrong. So if you believe, if you are of the mindset that police are looking to do damage, of course you think that more cops are bad. If you are someone that believes that the police are there to prevent damage and prevent crime, then it makes sense that more police makes that happen. If you believe that there needs to be a better understanding between what police officers do and how they do it, and people that live in communities that don't trust them, less cops is not the answer, because dealing with the police shortage as they are in Phoenix and other cities, they are running constantly just trying to keep up with calls for service. They don't have time for community service events. They don't have time for preventative crime measures. They don't have time for community-based policing. So what is our goal? So to the people out there that I disagree with, I respect other opposing views, but if you believe that the police are looking for trouble, then of course you think a school resource officer is an intimidating person. The only one that should be intimidated by a cop is a criminal. If you are dealing drugs on campus, if you are starting fights on campus, if you are bringing weapons on campus, if you are bullying other kids on campus, you should be afraid of the police. If you are a student on campus that's just a student on campus, you should be as okay with a cop as you are with a security guard. And so what's your mindset? And if your personal experience with law enforcement is that they are looking for trouble, then you probably dealt with the wrong cop. And I'm telling you from my extensive experience with law enforcement for my entire life, family members, friends, and then the research I've done as an adult, I've done a lot of research. And what I mean by that is I don't want to just talk about things that I don't know anything about. I've never been a police officer. I will never claim to know what it's like to be a police officer, but I have gone on ride-alongs for observation purposes. And I know when people say, well, you're seeing cops on their best behavior. I've been in situations where I've watched how people behave with police officers. I've watched police officers take a much bigger ration of garbage than any normal person would because they're wearing the badge. And more people should be exposed to that part of policing. They show a huge amount of restraint. The guy that beat Deputy Ruiz to death was aided until an ambulance took him to the hospital because of his critical bullet wounds by deputies that worked with Deputy Ruiz. Now, maybe not have been on his squad, but they worked with him. They did their jobs. I want to know how many of us would do that. Somebody beats your family member to death and you find them and they've been shot. You going to help them? You call a 911? You going to render aid until the ambulance shows up? Now, you may not shoot him again. You may not kick him while he's down, but you want to. Are you going to render aid? And that's what they did. So there are those out there that believe when that happens, it's a unique experience, and those are the cops that are not the norm. And then there are others that say that is what police work is. There are rogue cops. There are good cops that have bad days and lose their cool. There are a lot of bad things that have happened and will happen again. But when you are consistently taking any positive view of a police officer out of the public eye, cops, live PD, now school resource officers. So the only time any of these people see a police officer, these students are going to see police officers, is when something bad is happening. Is that what we want? Is that what we want? That the only time they're going to see a cop is when someone's getting arrested or they're trying to, somebody's been injured. There's a hostage situation. And I think it's a concerted effort. I think it's a concerted effort to put cops in a bad light and keep them in a bad light. And I think it's going to be detrimental to our society in the long run, without a doubt to me. In a moment, we catch you up on the biggest news stories of the day. We do it every day at 11:20. It's called Did You Hear This? It happens. Next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
It has been an extremely busy news day. Let's get to the headlines. Did you hear this?
Did you hear this? Broomhead's reaction to the hottest news stories.
Thank you.
According to a new report from ESPN, there have been three positive COVID-19 tests reported with the Arizona Cardinals this week. Now, we know one of them was star defensive end Chandler Jones. We haven't heard who the other two are yet. One more positive test, we're learning, means the team will have to move to intensive protocols. Here's what Luke Lipinski with 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station just said on the Wolf and Luke show.
Everything I've heard is that all the Cardinals are vaccinated, and Graziano did just tweet out, as a reminder, fully vaccinated player who tests positive may return to the team if he tests negative twice within 24 hours between tests, shows no symptoms, and is cleared by doctors to return. So this could not be an issue on Sunday, but also it is Thursday.
How big a problem could this be for the Cardinals?
It could be a big problem, and looking at the intensive protocols, and I went and looked at what that means, and that means going back to, and if it's the same as it was last year, it's going back to having team meetings virtually, unless you're outdoors and in masks, and going back to a lot of the ways, grab-and-go meals instead of sitting together at meals. But then how do you travel? I mean, you got to travel together to get to Cleveland, and what would the league say if you're in the middle of those intensive protocols? What are they going to do before the game? Because you don't want to bring it into Cleveland with that team either. So the team being fully vaccinated is a great thing. We'll find out. We know that the only person that is a player that we know that's tested positive so far is Chandler Jones, which is a huge loss if he can't play this weekend. But will this permeate further on the team? I think this could be a big issue. If nothing else, it is going to be a major distraction against a really good football team on the road. So I know it's supposed to be bigger than wins and losses, but from the wins and losses point of view, it's going to be a big distraction for a good team against another very good team.
Phoenix PD has seen a big decline in officers over the past year, resulting in a 22-second increase in response time to 911 calls. Executive Assistant Chief Mike Kurtenbaugh explains the department has already seen 150 homicides this year.
Last year, we hit 200 homicides as a city, which was the most homicides that we had had as a city since 2007. And we are trending this year, we were, through the end of September, to match that.
And will those numbers continue to go up as long as there's a shortage of cops?
Yeah, and the issue for this, and I've talked about this for a long time. I moved here in 1995, and I fell in love with Arizona in 1992 when I came here. It was a big city, not like it is now, but it was a big city then. But it was beautiful, clean, and it felt brand new. Crime is very, very low. I think it was at one time, when I moved here, it was the most livable city. It was just such a great place, and it remains that way. The Phoenix Police Department has been a victim of their own success. They have always, always, always kept a lid on crime in spite of shortages of officers. Well, now that shortage is exacerbated because cops are leaving the profession. If we do not get a lid on this, if we don't get a handle on it now, we are going to turn into other major cities with major crime that's happening in parts of town and a danger to people. When you call 911, the expectation is help is going to be there as soon as possible. And we need to be able to lower those times. And officer safety also gets questioned or is reduced when things like this happen. This is a problem that I've seen coming for almost 10 years. And now it's really coming to a head with more and more officers leaving the department or leaving the profession, and it's something we've got to get a handle on, like, right now. You're listening to Did You Hear This? We do it every day at this time with the big headlines. There's a lot of headlines. What's next, Jeremy?
Seattle area school district's diversity team leader just lost her job after parents discovered her racist and vulgar TikTok videos that basically condemned white people. And here's just a sampling of what Alicia Bush said.
You too can achieve the American dream if only you work hard enough to conform to society's norms. And by society, I mean white supremacy.
All right, now NFL coach John Gruden just lost his job this week after 10-year-old emails with racist undertones surfaced. And many think his career is over. Should this lady's career be over as well?
Absolutely. I mean, especially when your job is to be the equity person at the school, and you're talking about white supremacy, and she sounded a lot like what was Herman Munster's wife's name on that show? He sounds just like her, or she said, yeah, Lily, that's what it is. Thank you, Ed. Lily Munster sounded a lot like Lily Munster, and she's doing it intentionally. This is someone that's the equity director at a school. That you know that she feels this way, but she's so bold about it, she put it up online, which is why she lost her job. Parents just need to pay attention to a lot of this stuff, because I don't think this is going to be the end of it.
All right, and finally, this is a follow-up to a story we did yesterday on Sun center DeAndre Ayton. He admitted he's not happy. He hasn't been given a max-level contract yet.
I'm really disappointed that we haven't really gotten a deal or a deal done yet. No, I just really want to be respected, to be honest.
Now, Ayton's big boss, Suns owner Robert Sarver, went on with our sister station, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, yesterday. Was asked by Burns and Gambo if he wants to get a deal done with Ayton.
If we can get something that works for both sides, we definitely would. And, you know, as you know, in restricted free agency, sometimes that happens and sometimes it doesn't.
Does it sound to you like Sarver's really intent on giving Ayton what he wants?
I think that the attitude of the Suns is that he had a great season last year, so he's showing what kind of potential he has, but he hadn't lived up to that potential before that. So before they sign him to a max contract, they want to make sure that the DeAndre Ayton they got last year is the DeAndre Ayton they're going to get moving forward because of the money they're going to spend, which I understand from a business owner standpoint that you're going to want to make sure, or as sure as you can be, that you're getting what you think you're getting when you pay for it. That being said, Robert Sarver has a reputation here in town of underachieving with the Phoenix Suns. And he, in one season, was able to win back the fan base here in Phoenix. If he doesn't get something done here and the Suns take a step backwards, he's going to be back where he started with the reputation that he had before. So I think he needs to get something done, and let's hope it gets done soon. That is Did You Hear This for today. Coming up in a moment, we are going to talk to Roy Herrera. He's a Democratic strategist. We're going to talk about the border, the reopening of the border for people with non-essential travel, and what's happening at the border right now in Yuma and other parts of Arizona as more and more people are crossing our border. All that's coming up here in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Do you know a Remarkable Valley teacher deserving of a $2,500 check? We have our Pay Tribute to a Teacher program going on by the presented by your Valley Toyota dealers. Just text the word teacher to 411-923 to nominate a great teacher. That's 411-923. Text the word teacher. All right, I want to talk about the border issue, and we often bring on different opinions, different points of view. And Roy Herrera is a frequent guest on the show. He's a Democratic strategist, and I want to talk about the border issue because of the announcement that was made that the border is going to be reopened. So, Roy, thanks for coming on the show again. Let's talk about the border reopen for non-essential travel from Mexico into the U.S. How do you feel about it?
Well, I mean, in some ways, it's necessary for economic reasons. I mean, obviously, in a state like Arizona, where our number one trade partner is Mexico, having that kind of, you know, the border opening and that kind of traffic, commercial traffic and activity in people crossing the border, I think is largely good for our economy. So, you know, I think that is a good thing overall. Of course, it sort of shines light on the larger immigration reform issue with, you know, various incidents we've had at the border recently. But I think largely, I mean, both people on the left and the right would agree that opening the border is a good thing for economic reasons.
There were, and one of the things about it is that it's bothered me is that we were still allowed, the American people were allowed to go into Mexico, Rocky Point and otherwise. You could drive across the border with a passport. We have not stopped that from happening. You can drive back across the border without a negative test to come back into the U.S. If you fly into Mexico and fly back, you have to present a negative test to get back in. And at the same time Americans were allowed to go into Mexico, the Mexican people were not allowed to come into America. It seems kind of like a schizophrenic policy.
Well, I was recently in Mexico myself. I flew into Mexico City and came back and had to get a test to come back. So I saw sort of how it worked for Americans traveling there, which largely was seamless. But as you mentioned, you know, Mexicans couldn't come here because of, you know, sort of the aftermath of policies related to COVID-19. But I do think it is important to get Mexicans to come into the, you know, into the U.S., into Arizona, both as tourists or to do business or to visit family. And those things are all good for Arizona's economy. So I think at the end of the day, it's a good thing that we're finally at a point with, from a public health perspective, where opening the border makes sense.
And I think that I agree with you. And I talk a lot about policy because I don't like the personality conflicts about this. I think that we agree on more things than we disagree on both sides of the political aisle. But it's about policy. And do you understand the point of view on my side of the political aisle that these are frustrating policies because they don't seem to be consistent with, you know, the restrictions on Americans and the push for vaccines and testing and masks? And yet when people are crossing the border illegally, the only criteria really is if they're symptomatic, they're quarantined, that there isn't a testing protocol, there isn't a vaccine protocol. Do you understand why someone like myself believes we've got a schizophrenic border policy with this administration?
Oh, I totally understand that. And in a lot of ways, I agree, meaning that we have had inconsistent border policies or immigration policies for a long time in this country. And of course, you add to that a global pandemic, which kind of scrambled the calculus even more. But I think that's right. I mean, we haven't had, you know, meaningful or reasonable common sense immigration reform in this country in decades. And I think when you look at the various policies, how we treat different categories of people, you know, people, different countries, it is very inconsistent. And I wish that we would be in a position where politically in Washington, we could get something done where there is sort of agreement, at least on common sense, you know, reforms and policies to both benefit our country and live up to the ideals that, you know, we say we have, but also, of course, help our economy and, you know, make sure that our businesses are thriving as well, particularly in border states like Arizona.
Well, I think that both sides would agree there's two issues. There's border security and there's immigration reform, and both need to get done. But let's talk for a moment about policy. We've got a case right now with millions of jobs that are available out there that need to be done. We have a definite labor shortage. We also have a bunch of people that have come into the country that are allowed to stay here awaiting some kind of adjudication. Why do you think now, with all of those things happening and the focus being back on the border again, is there a chance that we can get something done in the Congress where maybe there's a guest worker program or a step toward immigration reform that includes that to fill some of these jobs?
I hope so. I sincerely hope so. I mean, there have been attempts at this recently in, you know, obviously we're having a larger debate about the reconciliation bill. There's been attempts by Democrats in the Senate and with backing of the White House to try to include some relief for migrant workers and sort of a pathway of status for migrant workers in that reconciliation package. It looks like that's not going to be allowed. So then we're back sort of in a regular order where we would need, you know, 60 senators to agree on something like that. But, you know, it's things like migrant worker reform and, you know, in sort of streamlining that process because that's what our economy needs, as well as creating a pathway to citizenship for our dreamers. Those are two things where there has been historically bipartisan support for those kinds of reforms. And I hope that in at least those reforms, even if they're isolated from the larger comprehensive immigration reform issue, can be done because there is bipartisan support for those measures.
So let's talk about the security side of it before we go. On the security side of it, there is that place in Yuma that's known as the Gap. And it's a huge gap in the border wall that's down there in Yuma. And now that there has been such so much attention paid to Del Rio, Texas and McAllen, Texas, we're seeing that the Haitian migrants and other migrants are making their way up through Arizona and now through this area called the Gap. Do you think that story for people in Arizona on both sides of the aisle is going to be finally some realization that we definitely need to step up security at the border?
Well, I mean, I definitely think that incidents like that and the media attention that comes with that has made immigration become more of an issue or come more to the forefront of an issue as far as priorities go in Arizona. I mean, we've seen public opinion polling recently that has shown, you know, immigration as the number one or number two issue that are on Arizona's mind. So to the extent that there are any incidents in a location like that or any incidents similar to what occurred in Texas, that obviously is going to put more pressure, I think, on our elected officials to get things done because Arizonans, you know, see that and want something to be done. So I think that's the case. But, you know, we go back again to sort of the problem of Washington, D.C. in some ways, where you know, for you to, or for, you know, the Congress to pass some kind of reform that would add border security, that would likely have to come in a larger measure, which will include, again, a pathway to citizenship for certain types of immigrants. So the real question is, can a larger deal be struck? And I'm not sure it can be, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that's I think, frustrating for both of us on both sides of this discussion, that there is so much that we would agree on that's useful, but it doesn't seem like people are willing to take that step to the center of the aisle and say, okay, I'm going to come from here and back to the old style of negotiation. Nobody gets everything they want and nobody's completely happy with how it is when it's done. But at least we're doing something to further the cause.
I totally agree with that. I think the answer is for you and I, Mike, to get elected and make those deals in Washington. I think that might be the only way it'll happen.
Oh, that scares me a little. And the fact that you said that is making everybody in my family laugh, because that's never going to happen. Roy, I appreciate the time as always, and I look forward to doing it again.
Thank you so much for the invite.
All right, thanks. So that's it. Roy and I are going to run against each other for a congressional seat, or maybe two different districts. We'll see. I like having the conversation with someone on the other side of the aisle where we can say, yes, we agree on this, or no, we don't agree on that. The policies of the White House are frustrating to me because I want America to succeed, and I don't see anything that's happening right now as being successful, period. And so when it's not successful, you hold accountable the people that are in leadership. More before we close this out, there's still so much to wrap up. What's happened with the Cardinals today? What's going on in Tempe? There's a lot more to finish up. We're going to do that in a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. If you've been listening to any of the show today, we've talked quite a bit about COVID-19 because Joe Rogan, on his podcast, had Sanjay Gupta, who is the medical expert that's used by CNN, and he took him to task regarding ivermectin. This was, to me, I was using this as a launching point about how divided we've become over COVID-19. And I think that there are people that they monetize the division. That's part of their, if there's controversy, that's when people pay attention. And if you're going to be in cable news, Joe Rogan taking Sanjay Gupta to task, and I think he was right in saying, why do you not say something? You're the medical expert on that network. They accused me of taking a horse pill, horse medication, and it horse dewormer. You know it's not true. I want you to hear the second part of this because there is some real life fallout from this. But this is Joe Rogan with Dr. Sanjay Gupta.
So you think that's a problem, that your news network lies?
Well, I don't.
Dude,
what did they say?
They lied and said I was taking horse dewormer. First of all, it was prescribed to me by a doctor.
Yeah.
Along
they
with
shouldn't have said
a
it was
bunch
horse.
Of if, other if medications.
If you got a human pill, because there were people that were taking it, the veterinary medication, and you're not, obviously. You got it from a doctor, so that it shouldn't be called that. Ivermectin can be a very effective medication for parasitic disease, and as you say, it's probably, you know, I think, what, a quarter billion people have taken it around the world?
More.
I get that.
Way more.
So,
way more. Billions of people have taken it.
Can I just come back to the one I want to talk about? Two things
you
on
have
the ledger.
To, you have, before we get to that, does it bother you that the news network you work for out and out lied, outright lied about me taking horse dewormer?
They shouldn't have said that.
Why did they do that?
I don't know.
You didn't ask? You didn't think that was you're the medical guy over there.
I didn't ask. I should have asked before coming on the podcast.
But they did it with such glee.
No,
yes,
Joe.
I watched.
So he didn't let him off the hook. He didn't let Gupta off the hook. And I think he's 100% right. Now, I did get vaccinated. I didn't take ivermectin because I didn't get COVID-19. I do know people that have. And I know that they took the medical grade, the human grade ivermectin, with great results. No one wanted to talk about that. I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to advocate for one medication over another. All I'm saying is the demonization of people you don't agree with. Oh, you don't want to get the vaccine. Now you got COVID, but you're willing to put a horse dewormer in your body, when the people in the media know that that's actually not true, that there is an animal grade, a veterinary grade ivermectin. But there is the human form of it as well. And they've always known it. So the narrative is false. I said there is a human element side of this. There is a real life, aside from Joe Rogan's reputation, there is a real life side to this division. Salt River firefighters terminated due to the refusal to get vaccinated against COVID-19. Now, we know that, and I think it remains this way and should, that tribal land, the tribes, are a sovereign nation. They are not bound by American laws. They are not bound by a lot of different things. And so the Salt River Pima tribe has decided that their police officers and their firefighters and everybody else that works for them will be vaccinated. They're going to lose cops and they're losing firefighters. These are our heroes. You remember the firefighters? Well, they've always been heroes. But 9/11, when there is controversy about police officers, there's never been controversy about firefighters. Never. Well, I shouldn't say never. At the Phoenix City Council meeting, a group of the anti-police groups said we shouldn't work with firefighters because they work with cops. But that tells you how crazy they can be. But for the most part, after 9/11 especially, we honor the men and women in the fire department. We honor those people, the paramedics, the first responders, all of these people that were treating COVID patients and caring for COVID patients were the heroes of America a year ago. Now you've got people losing their jobs. There's absolutely nothing the state of Arizona can do or anything else because this is tribal land and tribal laws. But you look at the division that we have had over COVID-19. You look at the division that we have over vaccines. And here's the real life fallout. These are men and women who have dedicated their life to serving the people. Many of them are medical experts themselves, whether they're at the paramedic level. Some of them are nurses. But when you look at this, and these are people that are saying, I am looking at this in a realistic way, and I choose not to get the vaccine. I'm young, I'm healthy. Surviving this is what's going to happen if I am to get this virus, and I don't want to take the risk of any side effects. And they're losing their jobs. And there are people out there, because of the division, that are applauding that happening. This us against them mentality has got to stop. It has got to stop. People that disagree with you don't necessarily have hate in their heart because of it, or even, you know, maybe not hate, but they don't have a lack of concern for other human beings. They just disagree with you. And at some point, we're going to have to get back to that because, and I think sooner rather than later, and I think people are starting to catch on. So we got more coming up, obviously, tomorrow on the Friday edition of the show. Thank you so much for being here for part of your day. I hope you can be with me tomorrow at some point, 8 to noon. So until tomorrow when I'm back in this chair, have a great day and God bless.